From KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. The cuts proposed in Governor Mike Dunleavy's budget would have big impacts for housing and homeless service programs throughout the state. In Juneau, providers say the loss of funding could put some of Alaska's most vulnerable residents back on the streets. KTOO's Adeline Baxter has more.
According to the city, Juneau has about 200 homeless residents. And over the last 3 years, the number of chronic homeless individuals in Juneau has been growing. But not all of them are living on the street. A big reason for that is Housing First, a supportive housing complex that opened more than a year ago. Matthew Fred Jr., who goes by JR, struggled with substance abuse, health problems, and homelessness for years before moving into Housing First.
It's gone on almost 3 months now since I became intoxicated. And it's with the help of the staff here, three of them, sat down and they had a chart that says, these are the times you got in trouble. These are the times you were helped back to your room. I hate to say it, but it sounds like a pun, but it was a sobering meeting with them.
That's the whole philosophy behind Housing First. Give people a roof over their heads, the tools to improve their lives, and the agency and the time to do the rest of the work themselves. Each of the 32 residents has their own room with a bathroom and a small kitchenette. The facility also has an on-site medical clinic. Since moving in, Fred has been able to receive counseling and have cataract surgery. Soon he'll have a dental appointment to replace several missing teeth. He plans to enter a job training program soon, too.
Basically, you build the building, and it's sustainable for the rest of the lives of the tenants, whoever wants to stay here. And so that's pretty incredible. You're not just improving the quality of life for people for a year or 2 years. It's for the rest of their life.
That's program director Daisha Davis. She says their residents have spent an average of 9 years homeless. Some spent close to 20 years on the streets and bouncing between various shelters before moving in. According to Davis and other service providers in Juneau, the governor's proposed budget would cut $11 million in funding to four state programs that are key resources for housing support and other services. Maria Levishuk is coordinator of the Juneau Housing First Collaborative. She says if the proposed budget passes, the effects would be drastic.
I mean, there's really not like any way to sugarcoat it. Like Housing First Phase 1 would close because 95% of the grant funding that Housing First receives for supportive services, which it cannot operate without, would be cut.
That uncertainty has left Fred and other Housing First residents and staff anxious.
If they were to close this building, this facility, it will be a step backwards, more than a step backwards, not just for the residents here, but for the community as a whole that worked hard to bring this about.
Governor Dunleavy has been touring the state this week, holding meetings with Alaskans to promote his budget. His press secretary, Matt Shukaro, says the proposed cuts are crucial to turning Alaska's economy around and ensuring growth in the future.
And ultimately, that's what potentially helps people get out of poverty and helps people in their time of need. Private economic investment in communities is also very helpful.
The legislature is still working on its version of the budget. So far, the proposed reductions have been much smaller than the governor's. In Juneau, I'm Adeline Baxter.
On Friday, there was another twist in the long-running saga of offshore oil development in Alaska. In response to a lawsuit brought by environmental groups, a federal judge halted the Trump administration's push to reopen most federal Arctic waters to oil leasing. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Harbaugh has more.
The Interior Department had been laying the groundwork for a series of oil lease sales in Arctic waters. The agency was expected to hold one in the Beaufort Sea as soon as this year. Now, it doesn't look like those lease sales will happen. In an opinion dropped Friday evening, a judge sided with environmentalists. U.S. District Court Judge Sharon Gleason wrote that President Donald Trump's executive order that reopened vast portions of Arctic waters to oil development was, quote, unlawful. Eric Graffy is an attorney for Earth Justice in Anchorage who helped argue the case, and he says the ruling is significant.
As of today, the law of the land is that the vast majority of the Arctic Ocean is permanently off limits to oil and gas leasing. So that's a really big deal.
Before leaving the White House, former President Barack Obama banned oil development in nearly all Arctic waters, adding up to about 125 million acres. Citing the need to protect offshore ecosystems, Obama used a rarely used provision of the law that governs offshore oil leasing. The judge agreed with environmental groups' argument that the provision Obama used gives presidents the power to withdraw areas from offshore oil leasing, but not to put them back on the table. Graffy says their position is that only Congress has the power to reopen Arctic waters to oil drilling.
What that means is that when President Trump unilaterally said, oh, I'm going to undo these protections that my predecessor put in place, he was exceeding his authority under the statute and violating constitutional separation of powers principles.
With Democrats now in control of the House, it's unlikely Congress will step in on this issue anytime soon. Raul Grijalva of Arizona, chairman of the House Natural Resources Committee, praised Judge Gleason's order in a statement, calling it a, quote, reckoning, unquote, for President Trump. Supporters of Alaska's oil and gas industry disagree and see the ruling as a setback. Kara Moriarty is president and CEO of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association.
Clearly, we're disappointed in the decision.
Moriarty says the trend of on-again, off-again lease sales in Arctic waters isn't conducive to attracting oil and gas investment dollars to Alaska. She says she's hopeful the decision will be appealed. So, too, does Senator Lisa Murkowski. In Washington, D.C., the senator said she disagreed with the judge's decision.
I think it's an erroneous ruling. I do understand that there is some ambiguity within the law. I think she has seized on that, but I would imagine that this is going to be appealed, and my hope is that they will make the right determination.
The Trump administration has not said whether it will try to get a higher court to overturn the decision. In an email, a spokeswoman for Interior declined to comment for this story. With help from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., for Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage.
Members of the state's Human Rights Commission emerged from an extended private meeting today with no decision on a personnel matter. Chairman Brandon Nakasato said the commission was not able to reach a decision based on its discussion in executive session. He says members will try to meet again soon, perhaps this week. He confirmed later that the matter was related to an investigation requested by Governor Mike Dunleavy. Dunleavy sought an investigation the day after Commission Executive Director Marty Buscaglia posted on the Commission's Facebook page a picture of a Black Rifles Matter sticker on a truck in the Commission's parking lot she said she thought was racist. She later removed the post. Two men alleged to be part of a violent white supremacist prison-based gang made their first court appearances in Anchorage Friday since their recent indictments on murder and kidnapping charges. 32-year-old Bo Cook and a 42-year-old man legally named Filthy Fuhrer, formerly Timothy Lubdell, are charged with multiple federal crimes, including murder and kidnapping under federal organized crime statutes. Justice Department lawyers say the men, along with several others, were key members of a criminal organization called the 1488s that operated both in and out of prisons. If convicted, the two could face life sentences. Prosecutors are not pursuing the death penalty. Both Cook and Fuhrer entered not guilty pleas to all five charges Friday. The judge ordered both of them to remain in detention until trial, which is set to begin May 28th. Federal prosecutors announced charges last week against a total of 20 members of the 1488 gang. Moderate drought conditions and above-average temperatures continue in Juneau. That has led to dry conditions and an increase in fire department calls over the past few days. Assistant Chief Ed Quinto says Capital City Fire Rescue responded to three incidents concerning brush and grass fires in recent days. On Friday, a controlled burn got out of hand in the Yawk Lake area. Fortunately, a man was able to put the fire out with a shovel before it reached his house, which is under construction.
Unfortunately, he was building his house, so he didn't have a water source. So it's a good reminder to people who's having a little pit fire, always have a water source nearby.
CCFR has also been monitoring an ongoing controlled burn at Stabler's Point above the ferry terminal that's led to some persistent smoke in the area. Quinto says the company responsible for the burn has a permit and is being safe. On Sunday afternoon, crews responded to a brush fire reported near Schweitzer Creek. According to Fire Marshal Dan Jaker, flames scorched an area about 400 feet by 400 feet.
We had a couple of people that saw four juvenile boys running away from the area about the time that they were noticing the smoke and the fire. We did an investigation on it, and we're looking at it as an intentional set fire.
Colder temperatures and rain are in the forecast later in the week.